To live in Jerusalem is to see the most beautiful light in the world, I think. A warm pinkish hue that may come off the distinctive stone everywhere. No one has fully explained it. Everyone has experienced it. Jerusalem is also a place of unspeakable ugliness, violence, religious-motivated intolerance, anger and suspicion amidst love and a spiritual peace found nowhere else in the world. Those contradictions are what I found in Jerusalem when I was there in the 1980s and 90s. Tom Friedman was just ending his famous stint as bureau chief for the New York Times, Joel Brinkley beginning his. In Jerusalem, the New York Times correspondent is like the 5,000-pound gorilla of the International Press Corps. This does not literally describe current bureau chief Jody Rodoran, but she understands the pressure and the scrutiny of her job. She's also experienced two wars in the Gaza Strip, two Israeli national elections, Palestinian success in the United Nations, collapsed peace talks, an impending U.S. nuclear deal with Iran, the Syrian civil war, and unprecedented regional chaos. It's been a remarkable 3 years, and it isn't over yet.
The level of viciousness and personal attacks is really distressing. And it's not just distressing because it hurts me and because people insult my husband and children and threaten them. It's distressing because I think of what it says about the devolution of the debate. I wrote a story last week about Memorial Day in Israel, and it was about a woman whose son was killed in the Yom Kippur War in 1973, and how for more than 40 years, people have come to her to a private memorial service every year, even though many of them know many other people who've been killed as well. It's just sustained itself, and I think that happens all over Israel. And also 23 people, more than half of them, not her relatives, have named their kids after her son, Gilad. Mm. And I got incredible feedback about the story, that it just felt like it really explained something about Israeli culture and was very powerful. And then I got a message from somebody I work with, a Palestinian official, who said, your lack of empathy for Palestinians is unbelievable. And I couldn't really understand the message because the story wasn't about Palestinians at all. And I asked him, I said, you know, did I not show empathy when I wrote about the Gaza artist? And I pointed out several other, I thought, very empathetic stories about Palestinians. And I realized later that this idea that you can't show empathy for both Israelis and Palestinians, or for both Hamas people and moderate Fatah people, or for Haredi Jews and secular Jews, I think it's really troubling. I mean, I have empathy for all kinds of people, and I don't think that it's a zero-sum game and that showing empathy for one side of a story requires a lack of empathy for another.
No, and I think people measure your empathy, that there's a kind of theoretical idea that there is a perfect balance of empathy. And in a place like Israel, how could you ever even know what such a thing would be?
I mean, I don't think empathy as a thing is measurable at all. But I also feel like this is a big concern I have about this supposed criticism of our coverage, is it's constantly takes this kind of scorecard approach, as though a piece of journalism or a political conflict can be measured like a basketball game. You know, I wrote a story now about a year ago, a little bit less than a year, when the three Israeli teenagers were kidnapped and then killed. This was before their bodies were found. I spent some time with the mother of the American citizen who was among the kidnapped, this really incredible woman, Racheli Frankel. She showed the whole country an incredibly poised way of handling tragedy. And I wrote a story together about her and about the mother of a young Palestinian kid who was killed in the Israeli crackdown in the search for the three boys. And I got a lot of outrage from the right or from Jews about the idea of putting these two mothers together in one story, as though I was saying that their experiences were the same. And I thought, I didn't say they were the same. I just said they were both happening at the same time. Mm-hmm. And, mm-hmm. you know, people should know that there are mothers on both sides, and there are things they have in common, and there are things that are totally different about them. And you could read both of them, and you could find empathy with both of them, and you don't have to decide whose situation is worse. Or you can decide. I mean, it's fine to decide who you think is suffering worse or who deserves it or whatever, but just know what's going on.
And that's something they're bringing to the story, not something you're bringing
exactly,
to the story.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Do you think Israel sees an opportunity to resolve matters with the Palestinians or move forward with matters on the Palestinians, given that Syria is in complete chaos and Iraq is in complete chaos and Egypt is not doing terribly well? And, of course, you can continue west. Libya is a nightmare. And they've got the Mediterranean, a cemetery, which is what the prime minister of Italy talked about. It seemed like if you could solidify some situation in Israel and the occupied territories, you might have an enclave that would have some security. Do people feel that way at all?
The short answer is no. When I got there in 3 years ago, I feel like there were these kind of two arguments about how the regional changes affected the underlying question of Israel and the Palestinians. And there was one strong camp that said a time of regional chaos is not a time to make any moves. It's more risky to make any moves, and it's a time to kind of hunker down and wait the craziness out, and then we can address these other things. And then there was another camp that really talked about the idea of an island of stability, and maybe if you resolve this basic problem with the Palestinians, it would be a stronger face out to the region. That second camp, I think, has weakened over the last 3 years. There's a slim majority that still supports a two-state solution with the Palestinians. There's a much larger majority that thinks that's impossible. A good chunk of that is attributed to the Palestinian leadership and the idea that they are not a reasonable partner for peace. And another big piece of it is the regional situation, the idea that with the rise of Islamic extremism in other forms, that the threats are just too dangerous to make any moves. And then there's, of course, also a strain, I think a small strain, that just basically believes that the whole river to the sea should be in Israeli or Jewish hands.
Jody, thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
Jody Rodoran stopped by our studios on her way back to Israel. She is Jerusalem Bureau Chief for our partner, The New York Times.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.